is Mr. Sacco real 4, not 3, as Mr. Moses announces.
Go real 3. With the, you just done the 15-mile march to the Algerian camp.
That's right.
Do you remember the name of that camp?
I think it was Ferdilou. That's Ferdilou. I'm pretty sure that was it.
Was it a tented camp?
Yes, tented. We went into a very big marquee. You know. Well, there's other troops in there as well. You know.
What were you doing there whilst you were there, the time that you were there?
Oh, we had little marches and kit inspections and not a lot, you know. We got plenty of time off to go down into Algiers, which was maybe about 20 miles away into the main centre of Algiers. You know.
And how did you find Algiers?
Well, I rather liked it, you know. Didn't like the French very much. They were very curt, you know. You couldn't get please or thank you off them, you know. But the Algerians were very docile. Not now. I found them all right.
Were you there long?
I would say about 3 weeks. That's a guess, yeah, about 3 weeks.
And what was your training aimed at? Just getting your feet after being on the boat? And
yes, and telling us how good the battalion was up there and how they'd sustained these casualties, and we had to go and give them all the help we could.
So you knew the battalion had been in action?
Oh,
at
yeah.
That time.
Yeah, we know that taking a hammering at Sedgenin.
When you set out to join the battalion, do you recall what date that was?
No, I couldn't tell you the date.
Sometime in March 43,
Well, it would be sometime in there. Went up there in Capra Wagon. It's quite a long journey to Tunis, yeah. We seem to be on 2 or 3 nights. You know, might not have been as long as that.
And presumably the train stopped and started to...
Yes, let you get off and all that business. Yeah.
Were you pretty tightly packed on the train?
Yes, pretty. I've forgotten how many to a pack. Buarada. And that was maybe about, what was it, possibly about 30 miles from where the battalion was, or the remnants.
And when you got to there, what happened to you?
Well, straight away they saw that I was a signaller and a very good, I went in the signal platoon. And at that time, other reinforcements were coming up from other two other regiments. And what happened, most of them came into daylight and make the numbers up. We had cockneys in and all different sorts then, you know, to make the numbers up.
Had you to march up to the battalion's positions?
No, we went up there in trucks. And the battalion, of course, were out of the line then, maybe about 5 miles behind the line. And all the remnants there, you know, what a terrible time they'd had.
What were they saying to you? What were they telling you?
They walked, saying they walked into an ambush, you know. They just they said it was crazy where they went, you know.
Were the spirits down?
Oh, yes.
Were they blaming anybody for that particular situation?
I think they were blaming some of the officers. I think, man, I'm not certain. You know, I heard one or two names mentioned.
What other memories have you got of actually joining the battalion?
Well, I hadn't been with them 3 or 4 days, that was all, when I got, and two of the signals got sent out with a radio set up into these mountains, and we were there in a mountain, kind of mountain. and we was, no, right, so we were in this mountain pass, and then we moved out and we went into what was supposed to be an attack. So we attacked this mountain, but when we got to the mountain, there was nobody there, so we just occupied this, it was a kind of quarry thing, and we just occupied that. And anywhere in the quarry, my set was being screened and I couldn't really get through. So the CEO says, this was Colonel Worrell then. He said, well, go down to the fields there, out of the quarry. So we went out of the quarry and we lined in the field and we got through then. Look at this. Then this chap with me, Gaffney, Tom Gaffney, he said, we've been sniped. So we lay there, we pressed our right down, and then we made one mad rush for the quarry. And when we got there, Colonel Worrell, he had a machine gun, I had to go type of it, had to be a brain gun, and he was firing away at this, he'd spotted it, he was firing away at this position, so they got him there.
Colonel Preston had replaced Colonel Ware.
That's right.
Probably just about the time you came out. Just
that's
before.
Right, yeah.
And Worrell was second in command.
That's right. But when we joined up, he was acting. I don't know where
Preston
was. I think it was like just days before, you know.
And do you recall the name of this particular feature that you were attacking?
Not this one, no. Because as I say, it never stuck in our memories because there was no opposition. Apart from these snipers on this hill over one day, so.
And that'd be the first time that you've been shot at?
That's right, yes.
And as you said, it was a question of getting right down and waiting for the opportunity.
Then we moved out of there and got to another position. We were in D Company under Major Duffy. We'd be in this position, nothing much was happening. There were shells coming over, but they were dropping in the fields, and we didn't see any much danger. We were in these dugouts. Then we got the orders to. I forgot what we did, send certain things back to battalion and all that, and straight away one of the lads says, oh, there's going to be an attack. And 2 days later, we were told we were going to attack General Barker. So we prepared for the attack, and we moved out about, it must have been about half past three and four when we moved out of the
in the morning,
yeah, and we marched to a position. You know, it was very dark then, you marched to this position. I always remember, and we were told to line up in a great long line. I thought this was really funny, and the intelligence section came with a long white tape. And they, right, get behind this tape, you know, and get behind the tape. Get behind the tape. We'll all stand behind this tape. And then the bombardment started out artillery, and they started shelling Jebel Barker. Well, I thought, this is great. There'll be nobody left alive on that mountain, because it was a blast running it, screaming over the shells, you know. Then we got the order to advance, and it was just, I suppose it was something like the World War, and I felt great, so I didn't feel frightened, and we went, and we were marching on. I thought nothing, because I was thinking, that nothing could live on there, you know, just, and when we got there, I remember, start to break light, you know. And then when he actually got to the foot of the Jebel Barker, the Sergeant Major Wales, you know, said, well, that was it. Oh, we're not finished yet. He said, we've got to go up to the top of it, then swing right. So when everybody got into position, we swung right. And gone about, it was a matter of, and they come out, it was like leading onto a kind of plateau, a valley, you know. When we got there, then these span doors opened up, and they got quite a few of the first bursts, and were completely pinned down, you know, absolutely couldn't move. And then they started with the mortars on us. And every time the buds, you know, we were absolutely pressed to the ground, you know, and it was really, and we must have been there for about 2 or 3 hours. I might be going like 2 hours, 3 hours. But it was really light, you know, the fire. And every time we made some kind of move, you know, the guns of the span doors would open up, you know. We were really in a terrible position. Then Major Duffy eventually got onto the colonel, and then the order was at the count of three, everybody up on the feet and make back for. There was a gully about maybe 60 or 100 yards down. So we got the three, then we all leaped up and we started floundering. There was me, Gaffney, and a chap called Thompson. I was carrying the set. I'd lost the toss. Whoever lost the toss had to carry the set, I'll carry the set. And then Thompson on my right, he got shot in the legs. But he managed to keep going, and we got to this gully, you know. And they saw his wound. But that was the last I ever saw of Thompson. And I've never seen any reunion or anything like that. But it was in the legs, you know. And the next day, about 2 o'clock, we went to attack again. We went round at this time, like, it went in another direction, but when we got there, they'd just gone. It was unoccupied. We just took it.
You'd have your bodies lying there, though, when you went in the second time, wouldn't you?
By Sergeant Major Wales, that one I was taught to do. He was dying. He was maybe about 4 yards from me. I thought, why doesn't somebody go? But they were completely pinned down. You couldn't budge.
What are your thoughts on the situation like that? Where you just literally didn't lift your head up?
Well, I was praying, actually. You know me, I was praying. And I had a little prayer from one of my sisters. Gave us prayed to St. Jude, you know. Prayed to St. Jude, you know. Because you couldn't do a thing. You were just lying flat, you know. And that was it. You just couldn't do anything.
And in addition to the spandau and the noise and the mortars, presumably you were hearing the cries of the wounded and the dying?
Oh, yes. Sergeant Major Wales, in the end of the day, was crying for his mother. You know, it was terrible, you know. And anyhow, he died of his wounds.
And does that crying and shouting around you, does that affect you as a person?
It has an effect, but you feel terribly sorry for that, because he was right close to me, you know, company headquarters, you know, Sergeant Major. And as the seed died.
Did you lose quite a number of men?
No, we wouldn't lose many. I think in that time, maybe, there was quite a few wounded, you know. And some who'd been at Sedgemoor, you know, another Sedgemoor, another Sedgemoor, you know. And
were they crying, shouting that out?
Yeah.
In the actual position you
were in? One of the stretcher bearers, he was shouting. He was crying. He was crying for his mother. He was shouting, it's another Sedgemoor. Well, of course, I couldn't do anything but Sedgemoor.
So it's possible he was tracking.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Were there signs of other men giving way that year?
I think just this particular one in that fashion, you know. But he was known before, apparently. Yeah.
They've known him before.
Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm. But they still basically lay there until ordered to get
Major Duffy,
back.
Yeah.
No one running away screaming.
Where
were the Germans in relation to your own position whilst you were lying on the bottom? Were they higher up?
Yeah, they're on a. It wasn't very high, it was about 8 foot, it was some kind of ridge, and they were on there, you know, and they had complete command, you know. But we had no chance at all of getting it. And it was just a company attack. I think the next day we attacked with two companies, but we met no opposition.
In the company attack going forward, although you say it was almost First World War. Where was your position in relation to the company commander? Did you move with him?
Company headquarters. That's right, yes.
And you were part of this long line, you weren't behind them at all?
No, some were a bit more forward than others, you know. But we moved off in this long line, you know.
And that was just marching, moving forward.
That's right, yeah.
Until you were fired on it.
That's right, yeah.
Were you able to get any signals back by with your radio when you could use it? You went back to the gully and was there no question of trying to get, you said Major Duffy got onto the cart to the...
Well, I think at Bransworth when we had them, a similar kind of set was an 18 set, and I think that was maybe very much like it. I'm not sure, mind, it could be a 28 set, but what we trained with at Bransworth were the 18 sets, and they were very, very similar. Yeah.
You would see some of the horrible wounds in that in this particular action for the first time.
Well, I didn't see whoever had been eventually taken away.
But you didn't actually see anyone hit them?
Not in this particular action.
But this was your first time.
Mm-hmm.
What are your feelings when you know you're out of it and for the time being at least you're safe? What's the initial feeling?
Well, we all came up there pretty nervous, you know. And most of us were asleep, you know. And I remember, and they began to shell again, you know, from with bigger guns. And I remember getting under a tank, one of our tanks, you know, a stationary tank, and Colonel Preston come along, you know. He says, "What do you think you'd happen if you fell asleep and that tank went over the pickup?" You know, I saw what his reasoning, you know. But I pride myself not being as frightened as most people, you know. Actually, I got a letter from the RSM Thomas, and he later became an officer. About 3 years ago, you know, and I felt really pleased with the PS. I always remember the smiling face of Tony Sacco, no matter what was happening. And I used to feel, not talking about that letter now, but when I used to see ghosts really frightened, I used to feel good, you know. I was. Somehow, I often think I was enjoying myself, like, you know, feeling superior to most, you know, most of the ones, you know. And
in times of very great danger like that, you had your God to turn to, religiously.
Yeah. Say a few quick prayers and whatnot.
And did they strengthen those words?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Did you feel that you were kept safe by God?
I felt that it was the thing to do, and if anybody could save you, he could, you know.
Did everyone behave pretty well in that very first action? I love that you saw a lot of it lying down.
Well, I think they were all right. Because, of course, I couldn't see everybody, you know. The battalion was in. As I say, we attacked the next day, there was nobody there. Then in Africa, we just did, I think, one more attack, which was successful. And then that was practically the end of the African campaign. Yeah.
So you pulled out of this one, and then you went round another way and found that the enemy had gone.
That's right.
What happened after that? Another action that you've mentioned that's got to come up somewhere.
Oh, yes, that's right. We attacked this place, I can't remember the name of it, mind this place. And we were just getting ready to go into the attack. And somebody says, "I see a white flag flying, sir." So we came down, we were looking, you know, then on this crest, we were like, over there was this mountain. And they said, "They're Italians." And they were coming down holding this big white flag. hundreds and hundreds. They were being attacked by the Moroccans, who were the horrors, you know, everybody here, the goons, as they had, the Marroquini, you know, and they didn't want to be taken prisoners by the Marroquini. I think they were part of the French army then. And well, they surrendered to us. There must have been about 800. And I was walking around, most of them having a big chat, you know, and they're saying that was the reason they surrendered to us. They were getting murdered by the goons, the Marroquinis. You know.
And could you speak Italian?
I could speak better Italian then than I can now, because since then I learned German. And I mix me German up with that. I speak better German than I can Italian, you know.
So they would be in a pretty bad way, these Italian soldiers.
Oh, they were pleased when they got to us, you know, and so they just marched them off, you know. They were pleased to be out of it, like, you know. I don't think they ever had a face for a while, like, you know. But they knew if they were captured by the guns, you know, they could be all murdered, like, you know.
I believe you had the Moroccans and paras with you, paratroopers.
Yeah, and the paratroopers were acting as infantry. They weren't doing anything. They were just infantry, you know.
Did you see them in action at all? Did you get in contact with them?
We went into some action, and from what I vaguely remember, we were very disappointed in them. You know. That's right, I remember them, the paratroopers are coming, you know, fighting as infantry, you know. But for some reason, I was really disappointed with them. Like, you know.
I don't think it's a role they're particularly trained for, though, are they?
No, that's right.
In the normal that's routine it. Infantry
uh-huh.
role.
That's right.
And was that was this surrender by the Italians part or just prior to the attack that you put in, the final attack you put in Africa?
Yeah, that would be about. Maybe it's about 6 weeks after the Jabal Barker attack, where they chased us.
In between the two, the 6 weeks, within that 6 week period, what were you doing?
Well, we're just in positions, and not a great lot was happening. And I can't remember any other like severe actions before they said it was all over. You know.
I think you said that you were shelled from time to time.
Oh, we often got shelled, you know, but. Not machine gun things like that, you know.
What's it like to be under shelling for the first time? And again, it's a first experience.
Well, I didn't like it. They were pretty angry. What was it? The guns they had.
Or 88s,
I remember that. Well, they were pretty accurate, you know, and I didn't like it much, the shelling, you know.
And shells raining down, presumably you head for the first cover you can get to.
Oh, that's right. But as I say, there wasn't much more action in Africa as far as I was concerned.
That last attack when the Italians surrendered to you, did you actually go into the action situation?
The last attack, you say?
Yes, the one where you had this white flag and the Italians gave up. Was that prior to going into the attack?
Yes, we were attacking the mummies within about an hour or so from then. Just talking about when all this happened, and I think that was about as far as Africa was concerned. I think that
and was this an attack uphill again? Was it
a yes,
mountain?
That's right. Yeah, it was always mountains, jebels as we call them. You know.
And you were always going up them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Did you actually get into contact with the Germans in this particular attack, this final one?
No.
It wasn't another lining up one, was it?
Oh no! It was as I say, I thought it was funny this attack was First World War stuff, you know. I never expected it to be like that.
But your training hadn't really prepared you for that kind of.
No.
How did the men? I mean, it's were they, you know, when you were talking in your groups, etc., after going, were they complaining about the way that they had to attack? Were they blaming the officers for putting them into that situation yet again after said your name?
Oh, I used to get, well, I thought they were saying it's another bloody said your name, you know. But I never used to like grumble about anything. I just used to, you got the same ones arguing all the time. Always the same ones. What they would have done and what they don't know. And that was it. And that used to bother me.
After this attack, you said that was your last action in Africa.
Yeah.
What happened in the intervening weeks before you moved over to Italy?
Well, as I say, when the end of the African War came, the Colonel Preston got us all together, and we were just outside Tunis. The Mediterranean was down there about 500 yards away. He says, now, he thanked everybody and how well we'd done and everything. He says, now, all you're going to do here, you're going to have a very easy time. You'll do one duty a week. And the rest of your time's your own. One duty a week. So, we had our breakfast this morning. I went and looked on this tree where company orders were pasted, and my name was on the list. So, right, I didn't need fatigue. I can't even remember what it was. Now, the very next day, breakfast again, I went and my name's on again, and it says 1 week. So I went and saw Corporal Addison, who was acting orderly sergeant. I said, hey, I always went first term names, but anyway, we come across. He said, oh, yes, you're in. He just crossed my name off. And he didn't put anybody else's on. And the four that were on were called Paler, Saunders, Paler, Little, Saunders, and Short. And they were given the job of was loading Hawkins grenades. They're the grenades you stick on the tracks of tanks, loading those on the wagon. So as I said, I had my breakfast. I went down to the Mediterranean on my own, because I couldn't swim. I was going to try and learn and swim. And I was trying to learn to swim. Eventually, I just gave up and come and lay on the sand. I heard this thud in the distance. I just like thought past for a minute what that was. So after a while, I started walking back and I got into my tent. And everybody's sitting with their heads down. And what had happened, the three of them were loading these Hawkins grenades, the four of them actually, and the heat, it was a very hot one, the heat blew the whole truck up and killed three of them. Paler, these were all signalers, Paler, Saunders, and Little. Short, he was very lucky. There was a, you know, an army latrine just dug in the ground with a bit of canvas around it. He went to the latrine. And he's on his way back. But what really saved him, these American Lightning planes were doing aerobatics. And he said he was just standing watching, you know. And then eventually started moving forward, and the whole truck went up. You know, three of them, all Saunders had legs and head blown off. And Paler was still